This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 433, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you and Revlon.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Hi, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 433. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello!
And he's still here, Josh Flanagan.
Is Connor on some sort of bluff or perhaps an outcropping?
A precipice.
I was looking over at the land, you know, as I want to do, and taking the majesty of the earth.
Of course.
Yeah.
Your strong internet signal there, though, surprisingly.
Well, good Wi-Fi out the plains.
Yeah. Remount them to Armadillo.
Yeah. The homeless thing didn't go over so well at South by Southwest, so we instead Buffalo. Uh-huh. Wi-Fi Buffalo.
Wow. So what this is iFanboy, and we lay comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book that they read, called that the Pick of the Week. We talk about it on this year podcast. Basically, it's the first comic that we talk about. It's
that's
the first
one
we talk
number
about.
One.
Yeah, and along with all the other books of the week and various other topics of interest and flights of fancy, delusions of grandeur, all that stuff. Before we get to the show, quick reminder.
Dumb jokes.
Definitely.
You're going to die here, you know.
We'll offend some people by the time this is over.
Star Wars references, Goodfellas references, Jaws references.
Band of Brothers references.
G.I. Joe.
Not so much anymore.
Thundercats. Paul hates G.I. This Joe. Is a I was wearing a G.I. Joe shirt the other day. This is a review show, and we will be talking about all the things that happened in this week's books, all the people who died, all the people who got harpooned, things like that. So if you're worried about spoilers, deal with those issues. Come back when you're ready. Josh had the pick.
Someone, one of the fans that are my Facebook friends who I don't know, changed their profile picture to a picture of them in a bazooka costume.
Sweet.
And it was fantastic.
That's awesome.
Like I tend to not comment and like things with people that I don't know, actually. But I was like, that's rad, dude. Yeah. No, bazooka. Like
the gum. Like he had his turtleneck over his.
He had the jersey, you know, and the helmet, yeah, and the mustache.
He's the sort of stupid guy with a big rocket.
Which is a metaphor for something.
Oh, this is from your show thing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a G.I. Joe
thing. Guys. Okay.
You're really, I mean, we're going to have to talk about this. Not now.
The one with the bird and the it looks
Josh,
like,
you know what the best thing I can say about Lazarus number 8 is?
Yeah, what?
Is that I was shocked it was only number 8.
I was too.
Because it's so dense. There's been so much story and so many characters that I feel like we're much further along into this. And I was really surprised because I don't often look at the numbers.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And, I actually had the same thought.
And then I read in the little back matter about the price increase. And as he said with number... with number 10. And I was like, wait, we're not even at 10? And I looked at the cover and I was like, we're only at 8? And it was just surprising because it's been so good.
Yeah, I think that this was one of those weeks where there wasn't a lot of standout. So I had to really think about what I wanted to give the pick of the week to. And Lazarus, to me, has been getting better as we go on. The more that they build on top of it. And this is a very common thing for sort of a Greg Rucka written book. Is that he really does have an overall plan, and sometimes he's just you know, stacking bricks together until all of a sudden you look up and you've got a castle there, and that's a metaphor. And in this one, what I really liked is you've had these sort of disparate stories that don't seem to have anything to do with one another, and this is the issue where the things sort of come together. And it also is you've spent enough time with these can we call them wastrel? I'd like
they're
to.
They're the waste, Josh.
Yeah,
the poor.
With the waste.
The dredge of society, the people who bring down people who.
Yeah.
I think they'd actually be the opposite of wastrels.
Well, either way, we've spent enough time with these other people who at first seemed like a little bit of a distraction to kind of get to know them. And you get to see the one guy, you know, Michael, he's got some doctor skills, and you sort of see that side of the world developing. And then at the end of this, you get an idea of how this is going to tie together with Forever's story. And I liked it. I thought it was really intricate plotting. It was very novel like, which of course, is Greg Rucka's thing. And then I guess the other thing that was occurring to me is that I feel like it's like for a lot of time, I don't think we got enough Michael Lark.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'd have him for a little while every once in a while, and then he'd sort of go away and do God knows what. But like we're getting this regular Michael Lark, and it's a totally original, like creator own thing that they want to do. And I think that that's super special. I mean, we've gotten creator own original stuff from Greg Rucka before, so that's not as special. But, you know, the fact that he's got somebody this good on here and they're doing great work is super fun. And I really like the fact that you're seeing Forever, they flash back and forth to when she was young and when she's now, and the real vicious mindfuck that her father put on her. But I like that you're sort of seeing her, you know, break out of what she is. And I think it's going to be really interesting, you know, to see what happens with that, basically.
Forever's
the world
dad
building
is kinda
here
mean.
Is ridiculous. She's kind of mean. He's a little mean.
Yeah.
He's tough. He's a tough love dad. He wasn't like a touchy-feely 70s dad.
He bought her a book. I don't know what more she wants.
Yeah, seriously. Actually, the only criticism I have for this issue is that in the opening sequence when we flash back to Forever's 10th birthday,
yep.
I didn't know she was 10 until I saw the cake. I thought she was regular Forever. I didn't get kid from
I agree the with that to a certain extent. And at first I didn't know it. And then when they were talking, I realized. I mean, they're just like, the thing is, like, it's
I'm just saying
subtle.
From the art, it just doesn't look like she
no,
look
yeah.
like she's
I get
10.
That. But you're right. Like, I didn't actually get that she was 10 until I just looked now on the second page. There's a big cake that's 10 on it. Obvious. Yeah. But I realized like that I was, because they didn't give you a, you know, like 10 years ago or whatever. Right. They didn't give you that. They just kicked into it. And she does look a little bit old there. But I'll take that. That's fine.
Which is kind of odd that they don't do that.
It's such a minor thing.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of odd that they don't do that because you have all these captions throughout the book saying, you know, population family to population serf 73.
I like that they're, I don't know. Sometimes as long as I don't get lost and I didn't get lost, I don't need to be spoon fed. I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. Which is a
right,
decision.
Paul, it's a book that's so tied to dates. You know, used to have that timeline in the back. It is interesting that they don't, but it's fine because he does it within the context of the scene itself, so it doesn't really.
Yeah, it sounds like we all like got over it. Like we were confused initially.
Listen, we're trying to find something here because this book is amazing.
We want to be fair.
I want to talk about another amazing thing. This page that I'm looking at, and I don't know what the page numbers are, but it's the scene by the pool, and I just love that just sort of the mood lighting here. And this is where I was like, I miss this
great,
guy.
Yeah.
And you get it's just this glowing iridescent pool.
Oh, it's by Santi Arsis or Arcus.
Really nice. I mean, it's not just. I mean, we talk sometimes. You know, sometimes we talk about colors just because they're pretty. You know, they're really striking. And with this, it's striking, but it also sets a mood, and it sets a time and a place, and it's very appropriate to the scene that's happening here. And I love seeing, you know, sort of the reflection of sort of the ripples in the pool against their skin. It's just really lovely work.
I will further that in saying that I think my favorite piece of work in here is the shot of the sort of traffic jam waste 74 miles north of Denver.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That first panel, that literally is like, if you were to give me the description of the kind of thing that a comic book artist does not want to draw.
Right.
I mean, it's like, here's, it's 1,000 people on a road. Oh, and there are horses. Like, it's all of the things together.
And cars.
But look how, yeah, exactly. But look how good the back of that, the pickup truck rear end attached to the horse looks.
It's a nice rear end.
And look at how
sweet, like, sweet can.
How just sort of he's gone, you know, super minimalist on creating the crowds, but it works.
It's impressionistic almost.
Yeah, like it's totally
Daniel
impressionistic.
Cunha, who also had great art.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're gonna get to that,
Connor. If
we go back to the dat. Well, go ahead.
If I was gonna say while we're on that scene, if you stumbled across the fuck bus, would you board the fuck bus?
No, are you kidding? I look like I'd get a disease just looking at the fuck bus.
Well, I mean, you don't know. I'm just saying.
Look at those beads in the doorway.
If I'm a waste, I can't read it anyway. I can't read that it's got the best, you know, whatever on the west.
I gotta say, I didn't. I didn't see that coming. I was like, it was very, because I don't, if you're
aware, it's a little vulgar for Rucka.
That's what I'm saying, right? If you're even slightly aware of Greg Rucka as a person,
but it's a shocking, it works because it's so shocking.
It is.
But if I'm a waste, the waste can't read, the waste can't tell that they've got the best ladies in the mountain territory. I'm using quotes because there's a different word in there, but you know, they can't read.
No.
Should be a picture of it. Anyway. Much worse than the dad, the 10th birthday, I thought was the dad in the present day when Forever tried to explain it was going to be a bomb set off amongst 100,000 waste trying to become lifted up to surf level. And he's like, well, find it. And she's like, well, there's going to be 100,000 people and it's just one me. And, well, you told me you can't find it? Like, that was the real tough love scene for me.
Yeah.
Really. I mean,
yeah, and it was a nice bookend to the other.
This is just a great world he's built. These are just great characters that live in the world. It feels so very lived in. We're only 8 issues in, and it feels so much more dense than a lot of stuff I'm reading.
It almost feels too dense. I worry, but not really. Like he's focused enough. But you could see part of the challenge here is to not get too distracted and going off into other sort of.
Which is what in the beginning I felt like with the waste that we followed, which you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
They felt sort of like a side distraction from the main story. But now that you know, trust Rucka. You know that they came back around to become important to the main plot. So.
And again, it's like it's hard to make this a book like this a pick of the week usually because it's like a low steady quality rather than a blow you out of your seat thing. So it's nice to have a week like this where you get a chance to sort of focus on it a little bit.
It's a fantastic book, and I think if you're a trade reader and you were interested, this is going to be a fantastic trade book.
Yeah.
And he talks about in the back how they're doing they're prepping a deluxe oversized hardcover.
Oh, I was hoping they'd do that. I didn't see that. Cool.
Yeah. So with full of all the back matter in the book. So that's really cool. Josh, is Jonah Hex back?
It appears so. It appears so. I may have missed an issue in my.
It's fine. It's fine because you don't.
Which is fine. The girl's dead. Which I thought was funny.
So Jonah Hex 30, if you recall, he went into the future. He met Superman. He met Batman. He met a girl. He turned into Dennis Hopper for a while. Got his face fixed by a plastic surgeon. Went back in time. Brought the girl with him. And she died within two issues.
No, they were like, I don't really want to do this. Let's just do regular Jonah Hex again.
Okay.
So this issue opens with him burying the girl whose name I don't even remember, which is fine.
She was Tiny Skirt Gonna Die.
Yeah. And it's back to being the old Jonah Hex book, with the caveat being that his face is fixed and he runs into his little girl, Tallulah Black here. She thinks that he's his own brother because how else would his face be fixed? She doesn't really believe it's him, which I thought was amusing. The only downside of this issue was that the main story was only 14 pages.
Yeah.
This is a co-feature, which I actually enjoyed.
Although,
the co-feature.
I'll be honest, I didn't read the co-feature. However, it was the artist is escaping me, but it's a very, very famous, well-respected
Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Yeah, him. It's
very Treasure Sierra Madre. There's a mine. It's a silver mine, and they all turn on each other.
Yeah, I sort of like looked at all the pages. Quite a bit, but I didn't so much.
Like a coffee table book.
The first half of this issue was basically the old Jonah Hex.
Yeah. Now and that I was thinking about because this is 30 issues in
of the other one, which was 100 something, whatever it was.
I know. How the hell? I mean, like,
did you cancel Jimmy Palmiotti's book? No.
Others have. It's like they've have, you know, because the movie already happened and failed. So none of this makes any, you don't get the sense like from hearing from them that it's doing particularly well. It's just, it won't die. Like Jonah Hex himself.
It's, I love it.
Crazy. But yeah, no, that's exactly why I put it on here. It seems to be a Jonah Hex book again. Not quite with the caliber of artist who we're used to, but it's still not bad.
No, it wasn't bad.
I don't mean that. I mean in terms of like in Jonah Hex's heyday, like
Jordy Bernay. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I mean, it certainly wasn't bad though. I really like the scene where Tallulah Black, you know, walks into town and you have the kachinka chinka of her spurs, you know, and the great sound effects work there. I thought that was a great sequence.
If you notice, also on that first page, Jonah Hex took a really long time to dig that hole.
Did he? Oh yeah, he did.
Just hours.
You know.
He chose a very dense portion of desert.
It's the desert.
Yeah.
The clay is very, very dense and dry, so you gotta really throw your back into that one. But if you're a Jonah Hex fan and had originally bought this book because you were a fan of the old series and you dropped off because you didn't want to see him in Gotham City or whatever, Jonah Hex 30 may be your return to the old ways. We'll see what happens going forward. But
he hooked up with another woman that night. He buried her. He buried her all day. Sun went down. That same day, he found his old girlfriend. He doesn't have time for sentimentality.
No, he literally buried his past.
I had to,
which was his future.
I had to bury a cat once, and
I want to hear all of this.
I hit a root, and it was thicker than the sapling that it led to up on the surface. I got really mad, and I had to use an axe to get rid of. Because I'd already put a lot of investment in this grave, in this hole.
Did you, when you wielded the axe, was there yelling like, Rah!
Oh yeah.
Was there a dead cat next to you the whole time?
In a bag, yeah.
Okay.
And kept going. And then under the root, there was a big rock. Oh, and so I started another hole.
And the East Coast does not fuck around.
It wasn't even my cat.
Yeah. Were you?
It was my aunt's cat.
Were you contracted? Like, I'll give you $5 to bury this cat?
I had no money. It was for family.
Get that Montgomery kid to bury the cat.
Yeah, he does a good cat burying, I hear.
Never again.
Any cats in Star Wars Legacy 2, number 14?
No, but there was Glass Rain.
Glass Rain?
Glass Rain.
Yep.
Interesting.
There's a German
word for that, I think.
Yeah.
So, CSO Anya Solo had been abducted by this dude, and now they're marooned on a planet, and everybody's all over the place. And what I kind of loved about this issue is that it follows that trajectory of Empire Strikes Back where it's you're out of the frying pan into the fire. And it just, it keeps escalating and they keep getting in these horrible situations and, you know, glass rain and toxic rain. And
yeah, which gives way to acid rain.
Yeah.
Like actual acid, like various
green
acidic.
And
then huge bugs. Like it was just a cavalcade of imagination and peril. They've all been fun or whatever, but I thought this one was a step a bit above some of the ones that we've been reading lately. You know what's interesting, I thought, is that Anya Solo, is she the granddaughter?
She's not many the daughter. Generations.
Oh, it's many generations.
Yeah.
She's the ancestral.
She's had a rough go.
Mm-hmm.
She was apparently in some sort of labor camp for a while.
No, if she was the granddaughter, she'd be in the next film. I mean, this is like, you know, this is like many, many, many
years. You're right. Also, there's whoever the IG-88 bot is. I don't know what his name is in this, but
I'm terrible at remembering droid names. But he
has a good moment in this he walks out into the, it's like a big panel, and he walks out into the glass rain, and he's like, I gotta get the line, but it's just like, this isn't suited for flesh, and you're just like, all right. it was like a really good issue, you know, and Gabe drew it as well. Which is always,
he drawing it sporadically?
He'll do like an arc here and there. I don't know if he's done one since he did the first arc. I mean, maybe this is either the second or third arc that he's done. But you know, it's always he draws great ships and he draws great action, and you know.
And you know those moments of, you know, tenderness that George Lucas tried to come close mm-hmm. to in the prequels. I think they really found something with that moment in the glass rain with, you know, under the speeder bike, basically,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, sheltered from the storm, and these two have a past, but what have you gotten me into? And it's really, really nice. So all of that, in addition to the sort of madcap chase from one, you know, horrible encounter to the next.
This weather is unsafe for flesh.
Flesh. And flesh.
Ah. It's great.
Well... I say to you, Jeff Lemire, no, 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 you cannot make Adam Strange Canadian. No claiming him for you people in the North. No. He's Canadian.
Has he not been Canadian?
I don't know. I looked it up after the issue. I couldn't find any references to his country of origin, but I don't think he was Canadian before.
Where's the, I'm having a blank because... Well, his baby, but where does he go? He takes the
Ram. Ram. Okay. The Zeta Beam. This is Justice League United Zero. This is the Canadian team, I guess. There's a Canadian flag.
The opening arc is called Justice League Canada.
Right.
That's the title of this issue is Justice
Why
League
is this
Canada
issue
Part 1.
Zero? Why is it just issue one?
I remember writing a post about this a long time
ago. It feels like an issue one.
Issue zero is usually come along like later to go, go before what happened in issue one. You don't usually start with zero. This is the second. We're going to talk about 2 0 books this week.
Here's what
if we
love.
Do zero first.
So Adam Strange is an archaeologist, and he's digging. Oh,
which is a boot.
He's a Canadian archaeologist.
He does say sorry. Also,
he does say sorry. And there's a mention of poutine in here, and it's very Canadian. And he's digging this hole, and they find this artifact, and the girlfriend is missing. And
so he goes to Comic-Con with it.
So he goes to Comic-Con to talk to Animal
Toronto.
Man.
What's it called in Toronto? What's
and Stargirl.
It's a Fan Expo.
Fan Expo. He goes to Fan Expo because Animal Man and Stargirl are signing
there.
Is that better or worse than, like, you know, fourth extra on Star Trek signing? If you're a superhero and you're signing at Fan Expo.
I find it really interesting that he would, given what Animal Man has been through in the last year or so, I would think he would take a brief hiatus from cons.
Right.
He also, I believe, and I'm not mistaken, didn't he win an Academy Award?
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's not going. That's,
but
he's not
being
doing a signing.
Billed as meet real-life celebrity superheroes, Animal Man and Stargirl, today, 1
Star
to 3 p.m. It's a three-hour billing only, though.
What's interesting
about
that.
They're not showing up whole weekend.
What's interesting about that is that it's not like Jeff Lemire didn't write the other book where he gave him the Academy Award and killed his family.
Right. The thing is, though, these are the two superheroes in this world who are actual celebrities. Like, he's an actor and she's a singer. So in that sense, I get sort of why those two are doing it.
Fan
Expo's
a big show. Isn't that like the second or third largest show?
Yeah.
Show like Comic-Con would pay somebody really big to come out, and if they were willing to do it, you know.
This was okay. I didn't like the change that made Alana, because you know the original story, Alana is a woman he meets, you know, John Carter like when he goes to Rand, and here she's his grad student who gets sucked up to Rand with Zetabeam, which I didn't like that change. I like the Kree hero, the new hero. I always, you know, it's good to have new characters and what's her name?
Kree yeah. Watton or Key Watton?
The Canadian Kree. Key Watton is what she says, isn't it?
That's what she says.
Oh, like Indian, not the blue.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She's a native, you know, Canadian native tribe hero.
And it's sort of like that Wendigo mythology, but they're not calling it a Wendigo. They're using one of the other words for it.
I found the alien stuff kind of very similar to the red and the green.
It gets there. You know what I mean, Paul? Yeah.
Like the strange aliens and the with the bonehead. I was just like, oh, this we're doing this.
Yeah, it's a little jumbled, like bringing all the characters together. So I'm gonna stick with it for another issue or two to see them settle in, because I like the tone, and I like the
characters. It's a good cast. It's a good group to not get along, and I think he writes the characters well, other than having Adam Strange say sorry. But I just didn't like the story, you know, the setup to bring them together. But I do like this group. I do like that they basically are bringing Martian Manhunter back to what he was before. Like the type of character, he's not so the angry sort of militant hero here. He's back to sort of being old John, and we're gonna get to that in the next book. But this was okay.
It was sort of average, but I liked it because it was refreshing in that it wasn't a dark, you know, Lee or Finch style thing. The thing that Geoff Johns has been doing lately with the Justice League books, and it's super serious and everything, and this just feels a little bit more like...
It's like afternoon adventure.
Yeah.
Saturday afternoon. It's Mike McCone,
which I like the art on it too.
Yeah.
He's good. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't bad. I just, there was a couple things that kind of bugged me, but I did like the character.
Yeah, so we'll see with it. One I really liked, Secret Origins number one.
Yeah.
This is a weird sort of book, and basically I don't know how it's gonna go moving forward, but holy crap.
When I was a kid, I loved Secret Origins. It's one of my favorite books. Secret Origins is basically what it sounds like. It was a retelling of the character origin.
Often that would be called an issue zero now.
Right. So you get a little vignette of every character.
I admire the restraint for just making it a number one. But here we get little vignettes looking at the origin stories from a different angle. And the first one is Superman. The second one is Robin. Dick Grayson, Robin, and Supergirl. And my favorite is the Superman story.
Yeah, that was a really, really, really good story.
It's exceptionally good. It's Greg Pak and Lee Weeks.
Really good. Yeah, Lee Weeks on art, old Daredevil artist from the 90s. He was really good. This was great. This little Superman origin story, which wasn't the typical Superman origin, was really great. And
there are
Superman feeling that we've been missing. I know what I loved about it, Paul, was there was like a little moment where they aped the Batman origin with him sitting in the dark in the chair. It looks very much like the scene with where Bruce is waiting for the bat. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment where he can go dark. He can go down that Batman road, but instead he looks out, sees the sunrise, and remembers his mother. And
you're right, it's totally framed that way.
So it's like this could be his moment where he goes the dark way, and he doesn't. He sees the sunrise, and he goes the Superman way.
And says, you'll remember what it is to be loved. And that's the turning point. And by the next page, he's acting as Superman. He's wearing the jeans and the t-shirt, and you get the kid with the cape on, and he's stopping a train.
Unfortunately, he printed the page to the horrible costume. But
yeah,
I thought this was a great story.
Yeah,
I really like the Robin one, too.
I'm sure there are people listening rolling their eyes at another Superman origin story, but this is a fantastic one, and the way it's framed is... It's sort of a passing of the torch between Lara, his birth mother, and Martha Kent.
Or the dueling narrators.
And you get, and so it's first it's Lara. And you know, you there's not a lot of, I mean, Lara's usually the one who's like putting him in the thing, and then they send him off, and dad's doing all the work and stuff. And with this one, they have a great moment where she takes him out on like a flying Segway thing in a Superman baby Bjorn. And takes him flying because they know that wherever he lands, the gravity is such that he's going to be able to fly. So I want to experience what it's going to be like for you. And then she says, let me tell you some lies that I'm praying will come true. And basically saying that someone will find you and someone will love you. And that did come true is Martha Kent. And there's a great moment in the car where they're driving him home. And, you know, she's, you know, reaching out for his hands and little baby Clark breaks her finger because he's super strong. And she says, I know that you can't tell the difference, but, you know, you're not, you know, old enough to understand what you did. But, you know, you looked like you were sorry for doing that. And I love that she sort of doesn't cry out and doesn't make a big deal about it because she has so much love for this lost little baby.
Yeah, I thought this was a really great short story.
Really touching and really well done.
I liked the Dick Grayson story a lot. Doug Monkey on art. Just, you know, this is more of the sort of standard Dick Grayson origin story.
Yeah.
A little bit. It was funny because this format was very similar in that you had this story and this one didn't end on the splash page, but almost did. And it was like splash page to terrible costume.
Right.
And this is the splash page to terrible Robin costume. But
you don't need to be specific about which costume is terrible. They're all terrible.
It's the original. It's the one they're using as the original, you know, his first suit, which was stupid. But I thought there were two missteps in this issue overall, Paul. One was, I don't know why you do a Supergirl story when in the issue you're doing Superman. I thought you should probably spread it out a little bit amongst the families of characters.
Yeah, like get like a Green Lantern character.
Do a Green Lantern or a Flash or anything. But
sure,
like
trying to have a lady in there.
I get that. So do there's tons of female characters, just but I don't know why you do them both. The other one is, in the old days, the covers tended to show you all three characters and you know in an unusual situation or something, and that way you sort of knew what you were in for. Here, right. It's just Superman. And I didn't really, had to read the fine print to know who else.
Yeah, I just assumed that it was all Superman. I hadn't read about it. And then I opened it up and like, oh, the Superman story's over. And now it's a Robin story, which, and I enjoyed the Robin story. But, you know, starting off with the Superman one, like everything else sort of paled in comparason.
Right, that was a really good Superman.
I do like the ending on the Robin story where it's like, you know, Alfred suggests, you know, it's a year after his parents' death. And he says, you know, you don't really have to mourn them. It's more of a Robin thing to celebrate them. And so he goes, you know, back to the amusement park and rides a roller coaster.
Yeah, I like that.
And he's thinking of his parents, and there's some, it sounds silly when I break it down, there's two Robins flying alongside the roller coaster tower, you know.
And but I thought it was nice.
It's a good moment.
Supergirl story was okay. I didn't love it.
The Supergirl story is the most New 52 of them.
Yeah, that's why I didn't love it, really.
The other two, aside from the costumes and Ma Kent being dead in the Superman story, are pretty timeless.
Yeah, I did like the art in Supergirl's story, but
it is good art.
It made me think of the main problem with the New 52, if we can go on a little slight tangent for a minute, is that you have to build a path from point A to point B in anything you're doing, right? And you have to take the proper steps to get from point A to point B. And when Crisis and Infinite Earths happened, they started over. For the most part, and the characters started again. What the problem with New 52 is they are trying to have point A and point B at the same exact time. And what I mean by that is, let's start over, but also not change anything and have all the characters be there and nothing's really different. So it's all jumbled. It's a jumbled mess. And I thought of that also when I was reading Batman Eternal, when they mentioned, again, that Batman's only been around for 5 years, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever in terms of the story. And it's just like, they wanted to start over, but didn't want to actually start over and change anything. So they've started over, but then also kept everything. And it just causes all these characters to be jumbled up. And, you know, if you want to have Tim Drake and Damian and Stephanie get to them, start, you know, don't just have them all be there in the beginning again. And it's just a big mess.
There's a great man who never really existed named Mike Ehrmantraut, who would have said that the New 52 is full of half measures.
Right. Yeah.
No more half measures. Go
get there.
Go big or go home.
Introduce the new more Robins after a year, but don't have them before Robins when it starts over, just because you don't want to lose any of the characters. It's so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's talk about our sponsor, Amazon. Go to iPrimo.com/Amazon, and you can buy all kinds of stuff from trades to – can you get axes there, Paul?
Yes.
I have definitely bought an axe on Amazon.
Is there like a cat burying kit you can get on Amazon?
I'm going to need a new axe after that root was –
go there. Gnarly. You can make all your Amazon purchases, and we helps the show out by giving us a little piece of the pie. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of Amazon's pockets. And that's for any purchase whatsoever. You can buy a car. You can take a trip. Anything. You can do that through Amazon. And We appreciate that. Also, ifanboy.com/registration, where for $3 a month or $30 a year, you can become an iFanboy member and help the show directly, and we really appreciate that. It's a recurring charge. You can also go there and just donate any amount of money you want, and we thank everyone who does that. Helps keep the lights on here at iFanboy.
I'm just imagining somebody buying a car on Amazon and like you get a big stack of gift cards and they're just scratching them all off and putting the codes in manually. And
they're on the phone arguing about like I have Prime. What's here in 2 days? bullshit, I paid my $80.
Original Sin Zero. I wasn't going to read this originally.
Yeah.
Kind of burnt out on events. Kind of,
yeah.
But Jason Aaron's writing the event, and I kind of want to check that out. And so issue zero I read wasn't Jason Aaron. This is the zero issue. It's Mark Waid, who's great. Mm-hmm. And it's Jim Chung on art. So I was like, okay, well, I can at least read this.
It's Jim Chung and Paco Medina.
Yeah, a little bit. But I like this.
I really like the premise of this, so I've been excited about this issue. And the whole idea is Nova, this new young Nova, has this weird sort of friendship with Uatu, the Watcher. And the whole thing with Original Sin, something bad's going to happen to Uatu. They preview it at the end of this. It's not a huge
spoiler. The Original Sin is that the Watchers broke the Prime Directive.
Yeah, basically.
And they got involved. They gave nuclear power to some primitive race because they decided they were going to help the races flourish and not just watch them. And at first they did flourish, and then when the Watchers came back to check on them, they had wiped themselves out. So they decided no more meddling. They're just going to watch silently and creepily in the corner. And I kind of liked this. I thought it was fun.
I really liked it as sort of a character study. And yeah. I thought Waid was really good at writing Sam Alexander. There's a really nice moment where he comes up and he says, you know, I know he's visiting him because no one's ever bothered to ask him why he watches. So because he had a conversation with the Avengers and he had all these questions and they had no answers for him. He's like, well, why don't I go ask? I can go into space.
So he brings him a housewarming gift.
So he goes to the moon and he's going to give him a housewarming gift. And he says, I'm not old enough to buy wine. So I got you this. And it's this, you know, hastily wrapped box. And it's from his first appearance when he popped up at the end of Avengers versus X-Men, or the beginning of him, or whatever. He popped up in that Infinite comic, and there's all this rubble from the Phoenix Force, and he saved one of the rocks, and he gave it to the Watchers. I don't know if you collect shit, but have this. It's a rock. And it's a nice little moment. I thought it was really funny when they presented the idea of, you know, giving nuclear power to, like, basically the cave people. And I was like, that's going to go over well.
I don't know that I'm going to like the story from what I've heard is coming, and I mean the next, you know, the real once we get past zero.
This is almost like a one shot that you could.
Yeah, I like this one as a one shot story though quite a bit. I don't necessarily want to see real Nick Fury die and all that shit, but I like this a lot as a one story.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
No, I would recommend this even if you're not interested necessarily in Original Sin. Pick this up because it's good character work and it's Waid.
Waid. So you may remember that when we did our end year show, we all picked an artist that we sort of wanted to give, and I gave I gave my nomination to Daniel Acuna. Mm. And this is not the first time that we've talked about this, but he showed up on in Uncanny Avengers. I think he's actually been in the last couple issues of this. This is part two, so he's in at least the last one. And when I say he's the artist, like he does all of the things,
mm-hmm. everything on the page,
everything, you know, pencils, colors, inks, cover, whole deal. And I just read through this, and I just think it's been such a cool evolution of art style that we've seen from him from when I think I first was aware of him on Green Lantern.
Oh yeah, he had a totally different
number of
style
years
like
ago.
Green Lantern, way
yeah,
back.
Yeah. And it's really just come around to be this beautiful mix of minimalist, but modern, but also sort of with a slightly
painted, but not
yeah, but with there's a Wally Wood, Jack Kirby flair to some of it. It's just absolutely wonderful to watch, and I mean, he's just a monster. It's just absolutely wonderful, and I think one of the other things I noticed about this is that. Remender has now taken this. Remender, I realize, is dallies a lot in alternate worlds. Yep. It's like he's decided, yeah, I don't want to deal with all that other stuff that's going on. So he took Captain America into the Z dimension or whatever that was. And like in
Uncanny X-Force, yep. A lot of them alternate worlds.
They were in all those different ones. And that's what's happening here again. And this world is nuts, by the way. And I really like all the sort of very classic conflicts that are put on and you know, how Alex Summers is, you know, he's put in this sort of impossible position and he's just always ready to go off and explode all the time. It's 19 issues in, man. And this has been a really good series. I think it's a little bit forgotten at this point. Maybe because it's not part of the main thrust of what Marvel's doing.
But it's the only
doing.
Avengers book I'm reading.
Yep.
So therefore, I think it's probably the best Avengers book. But if you're like a continuity nerd out there, this is like crack for you.
Hang,
remember
Doom 99, and you've got Spider-Woman from Spider-Girl from that Earth X stuff, and maybe you got May Parker, you've got Arno Stark, and Magistrate Braddock.
You don't even have to know Cyclops all that stuff.
Right. No, but it's fun if you like all that stuff.
There are a lot of people who are like raising their eyebrows. He's so good at shepherding. He's so good at shepherding in the black sheep of all the different superhero families. Mm-hmm. And bringing them in and making them really special.
This is a guy who made Phantom X a great character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is something that Grant Morrison could not do. And he created him. So, you know, it's just been a super series, really, all the way through.
Super.
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 Elektra, number one, by Hayden Blackman and Mike Del Mundo, one of my favorite cover artists from last year. He did
Mike of the World.
Yeah. And seeing him do interiors, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, Hayden Blackman's coming off of Batwoman. And that was a really interesting – this is not a book you want to read digitally, and especially not in, like, guided view or anything like that. If you can read it in print, it's the way you want to read it because it's got that whole – just the same way that Batwoman had that chutes and ladders style of page layouts, that's what Mike Del Mundo does here. And and Blackman's also really good as a prose stylist, so it's kind of a wordy book, and there's a lot of interior monologue, but it's all so well paced, and matches the they do a good job of breaking those monologues up into little pieces and interspersing it through the art, so it has this really nice flow to it. And basically, Elektra is going to the matchmaker and saying, I want somebody to kill. I need to kill somebody. Give me a job. And they give her a job, and she's got to go get this dude. And there's another assassin out there. And remember the last time we saw Bullseye in the pages of Daredevil?
No. Yes.
Yes.
And he's basically in a big sarcophagus.
In an iron lung.
Yeah. I was confused with the Superior Foes when it was LMD.
Yeah, I was like, did they
got you.
Something that the editor not catch this? Because it kept going. And I was like, oh, okay, and then they finally, all right. Yeah, so the real Bullseye is still out there, and he's not having fun. And there's another assassin who wants to, I guess, eat him, or a little bit of him, to assume his powers.
He's a sebopath.
Does that work? Yeah. That's
asking for a friend.
Does it...
Can I want to make a comment about this cover.
Yeah.
And I could be off base, and I accept that. My first instinct when I looked at it was like, man, this looks a lot like that really famous Jock Joker cover.
Hmm.
Now, that being said, this cover is an amazing piece of design.
It is.
With all of the little ninjas and the severed body parts.
And in all honesty, I didn't notice that.
Oh, I did immediately. Like, okay. It's just same
I can
color
see palette. Now that you say it.
Yeah. But like in all, like her eyes are weapons. Like it's in her nostrils are tiny little knives. It's really like that. I'm just staring at this cover. This is amazing. And the blood splatter.
If you're going to do an Elektra ongoing with the kind of legacy that's attached to Elektra solo stories, you better do good. And I think this art is special. I think that this is worthy of the name.
Yeah, I see. And it does stick with a legacy in terms of, you know, Sienkiewicz and Miller.
Really interesting. And I don't know entirely the process that he used, but it looked like fresco in places. Like there's this, and I don't know if that's a post.
You have an art
thing.
History degree. I don't.
Painting on a wall.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
The Last Supper.
Yeah.
It has this, there's this look to it, that this texture, that it looks kind of faded.
I took the George W. Bush. I don't know what you're talking about. you're talking art. I'm gonna amend my fences.
I got Chimera wrong last time, so I needed to step up my game.
It's fine. You did. No, it's fine. All right. But,
yeah, this is good.
God, I miss him for that one purpose.
For that one purpose.
Yeah.
Sovereign number two. This is
sounds
by,
like a Wildstorm book that came out, but I know it didn't.
This is Chris Roberson, art, very special art by Paul Mayberry. Really, really nice. And color by Jordan Gibson and Brad Simpson, as well as Paul Mayberry. Dave Ocampo came on while Josh was on paternity leave and talked about the first issue, and it had completely slipped under my radar. I just wanted to make a quick mention that this is really good. This is a cool fantasy series, and if you like all of the like culture building that goes on in Game of Thrones, you know, like visiting the Dothraki and you know, visiting the what's Theon?
Theon is the
Greyjoy.
Ironborn.
Ironborn. Yeah, yeah. And so like they have all those different cultures. You know, it's not all just like Tolkien fantasy.
Roberson's no slouch.
This is really cool. This is in, it's kind of in the same way. So it might turn people off. Infinity, the way that Hickman sort of, it wasn't character focused. It was sort of group focused. And it was a lot of overarching world building stuff, and not necessarily intimate character moments. They might be building to that, and there definitely are scenes, but there's a lot of just what is this society like? How do they handle magic? There's a lot of, you know, Jedi mind trick stuff, and how each culture sort of appropriates that stuff and digests it. Yeah, this is fun.
Cool. It is now, let's see, we made it under the wire, for the book of the month, Connor. This book is a book that I want to get, and it looks really cool.
You
so
do.
Convince me.
The book of the month for April. By the way, I had one more week. Okay. We have one more week of April. Next Wednesday is still April.
Well,
but the book of the month for April.
You don't
want
to talk about it in May though. That's
2014. That Boxers and Saints from Gene Luen Yang. And this book actually came out at the end of 2013, but it's been getting a lot of notice lately. In fact, it won the LA Times Book Festival Award for Young Adult Fiction just a few weeks ago. Not even a comic book, just
awesome.
Young adult fiction.
Yeah.
This is over 500 pages. It's broken up into two books. This is the best thing that I've read from Gene Yang. It's fantastic.
Saying a thing.
I was blown away, actually, mm-hmm. how good this is. I'm trying to take the books out of the slipcase, but they won't come out, so I'm going to wing this one.
We talked about Gene Luen Yang last week when we were talking about Shadow Hero. He's the guy that did Level Up in American Born Chinese.
Yeah. What this is it's a story of the Boxer Rebellion, which if you don't know, it was a real historical event in which the peasants of China rose up to try to remove the foreigners who had been coming into the country to who've been, you know, carving it up for their own benefit. They're the British, the Germans, the Russians, the, you know, the Australians. There was all these foreign powers invaded into China, brought with them Christianity, and sort of threw the whole country in upheaval. And this was the Boxers, as they were known, the farmers and people rising up and invading Peking and trying to drive them out. Didn't work so well for them. But this is a story told from two perspectives. And it's really interesting because the Boxers and Saints. So the Boxer side is told in one book, and the Saints or the Christian side is told in the other book. The Boxer side is about twice as long as the Saints side. And at first, when I started reading the Saints side of Saint book, you read the Boxer book first, and you should read the Boxer book first. I thought, oh, the Saints side is really getting a short shrift. I really like the Boxer story more. But there's actually really interesting things going on both sides, and it was really, really a gray story, and just. To give you an over, I'm having a hard time just trying to figure out how to talk about this because there's so much going on in this book. But
it's significantly large, right?
It's over 500 pages total. Jesus. But you can read it in one afternoon, which is what I did.
They also say you can read one or the other, separate of the two. But
you can, but the stories interconnect, but you don't know that until you read the second one. The characters overlap.
Could you read it in either order?
I would read Boxers first because it's a more overall complete picture of what's going on in that world.
Yeah. I would say so.
You really
too.
You but get you, a much better could, handle of what's happening.
You could go both ways. You go either way, but I would read Boxers first, and that's yeah. I did it that way because it's called Boxers and Saints.
Right.
So basically, the story
is that in the Boxer side is there's a village and there's a young man in the village with two brothers and a father, and the father is well respected in the community and liked, and one day gets beaten to a bloody pulp by some Christian missionaries, and he's no longer the same. He can't speak and doesn't talk and just sits there and stares at the window. He's clearly got brain damage. And then so one day this young man comes to town. Like, it's called the Red Lantern, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a kung fu master, and he starts training them all, the men in the village in the art of kung fu. And turns out he's part of this sort of shadowy organization that meets out frontier justice where the government can't help, and sort of starts spreading the idea of all these farmers training themselves in the art of war. And it spreads to the one then drive out the missionaries and the governments that have come in, and you know it starts off, you're totally on the side of the Boxers, right? You're like, yeah, drive them out. It's like the settlers, the Plains Indians, you know. It's like they mm-hmm. came in, they're stealing our land, they're converting our people to Christianity, and this is awful, and they're destroying the culture. But then it starts getting a little gray. Once they start sweeping the land with their swords and their kung fu, and they start killing women and children who are Christian, who have been converted to Christianity, by the end, both sides are very bloody and dirty, and neither side is right or wrong in this scenario. Although I think it's still on the Boxer side ultimately, but there's a lot of moral gray in the story, which I really loved, which spills over to the Saints book, in which we meet this young girl who is the fourth girl in her family. And if you know China at all, then you know that no one cares about her because she's not only a daughter, but she's the fourth daughter in the family.
And four is a homophone for death. So
yeah, and they don't even give her a name. She's just called fourth daughter. And she ends up seeking solace in Christianity and in the Christian missionary because she finds people that actually accept her and want to give her a name on her baptism, all the things she's not finding in her own village. But she's also talks to Joan of Arc, and this is also not like a pure historical fiction. It's very fantastical. The Boxers, assume the power of the gods and they turn into the gods when they fight. So
yeah,
it's a little
steeped in either mythology,
right? So it's not a pure like nonfiction story, although it is. But there's a lot of fantastical elements in it. And
it's also there's moments of humor too. I mean, it's not super super grim. What's interesting?
No, it's very funny.
It.
And the character, I love the girl, the female character, fourth daughter, is really charming in sort of Stephanie Brown, Veronica Mars way.
Yeah, I liked her a lot, and I kind of, even though I loved both of them, and I love it sort of as a whole, as a piece. If I had to pick one or the other, I like Saints. It feels tighter, and it feels that the character, there's a little bit more going on with this girl. And I was fascinated by this idea of this girl is just shunned because she was the fourth in line.
It right. had
nothing to do with her. And then people kept calling her Devil Girl, so she started making these horrible faces and just embracing that. And she has a little like really, really creepy looking raccoon sidekick.
Yeah. And once you read the entire 500 pages, you see how intricately plotted it is
yes.
between the two books and two stories and how it all comes together and how there's really multiple levels of storytelling going on here. And the revelation at the end of Saints that her idol, Joan of Arc, would have been a boxer, really was sort of a stunning revelation mm-hmm. for her and for me as reading it. And also it's really, for a YA book, it's really kind of bloody. I mean, there's a lot of severed heads and people holding up severed heads. And
that's one of the really interesting aspects of the book, and Gene Luen Yang drawing it himself, because he's done other things where he's had other artists come in. This is drawn in very much. I mean, it's an evolution of his style, and it's the best looking thing that I think he's done. But it's still very much the style of American-born Chinese. Yeah, and so it's kind of shocking when you get to those really brutal moments that it's portrayed in something that a lot of people would say it's a all ages kind of style.
Bloody, bloody, bloody battles in here, and when the Boxers sweep through the land and make their way to the capital, and then have their big battle in the capital with all the foreign armies in their compounds, and this is a really, really great work.
It is, and
really, I was really impressed on every level by this.
I love
by
that
this.
Feeling.
When I first heard the concept,
Josh, you will love this book.
Yeah, and the notion that you would see the same scenes.
Different books,
different perspective. I was like, that's such a brilliant idea. And it's executed so well. It's not.
Yeah, you really get this. You really get everyone's point of view, and you see. I mean, you see. Okay, this side isn't as bad as they think, and yeah. both sides tell lies about the other and myths, and you know, there's all the myths about what the Christian missionaries do to the native Chinese, and they grind up their eyeballs and all these horrible things. And then when you read the other book, and there's there's rumors about what the Chinese people do to them. You know, and there's just, you realize that everyone is operating on fear and xenophobia and killing each other over that. And it's really this is such a layered work. It's not very straightforward at all. You read it, and your mind is thrown in 15 different directions after reading it. Really, really impressive.
I love the colors on this as well.
Yeah.
And each book has its own sort of color palette. Boxers is a very earth tone, kind of really rich earth tones though. And when it gets into some of those traditional spirits, very colorful. It's almost
black and white.
It's almost black and white, almost, but it's like sand colors, and there's charcoal grays in there. It's not quite black and white. It's very,
when the spirits show up like Joan
Arc, glowing gold.
Like glowing gold. But it's really, it's a masterwork.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like Jeff Lemire's Essex County trilogy. That's what I would compare it to, like that kind of thing. That it's really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So get the box set.
First, second press. You get it in a box set slipcover.
It's a really nice presentation.
Yeah, really. I mean, it came out last year, but won a major award a couple weeks ago, and it really deserves every accolade it gets. And if you're at all into history or religion, it tackles all kinds of different elements. And if you know the story of the Boxer Rebellion, which I didn't really know that much about, other than knowing the name.
The only war I know less about is the Boer War.
So then that's perfect. So you shouldn't know anything about it going into it. Don't look it up on Wikipedia or anything.
I won't.
Most of what I know about the Boxer Rebellion, I learned from that one episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I don't even know is that a joke?
Spike was in the, I think, or Angel, one of them. I don't know. It was a flashback. Whatever.
But Josh, you will love this. This hits everything you love about comics.
Yeah.
So Boxers and Saints from Gene Luen Liang, First Second Press. I could not give it a higher recommendation.
Co-signed.
Yes. Well, all right then. Let's very quickly do one quick email from the crowd. Kevin from Fairfax, Virginia writes in and says, I have a friend that recently became a father for the first time, and I'm thinking about getting him a comic that has something related to fatherhood or becoming a father. He's already a big Green Arrow fan and read all the daddy issue stuff in there. Can you guys recommend anything that would be good? Anything where the hero becomes a father? Thank you. I have one example. I was curious if you have something else. I think Man of Steel is probably the best thing, because you watch him just let his father get ripped away for no reason.
Oh, Paul's gonna hear getting.
I was like, oh, he's talking about the comic. He's not talking.
A lot of the Batman and Son stuff. I mean, you're talking about Bruce having to come to terms with being a father. That first arc from Grant Morrison and Andy Kubert was a lot to do with Bruce accepting his son.
I got a good one. Here's a good Superman one. Secret Identity.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit, but at the end, those last chapters where he has his own kids and he's kind of worried about them, and it's very much at the forefront.
I mean, I this is not a you can just get. I mean, unless you really like your friend, but the first thing that came to mind, and the, you know, to me, the preeminent superhero father story is Starman, because it's the whole thing is about Jack's relationship with his father and then what happens to him later. Right. You know, it'll make a new dad cry. I've no doubt in my mind. It's very good for that. I'm trying to think of a shorter thing that does that.
Watchmen?
Yeah. No.
Ooh.
Not so much.
There's not a lot. That's,
well, there is. I mean, Robert Kirkman can't write a line without having a father issue in it. But,
right. I mean, I'm looking at The Walking Dead, but like.
No, but I mean,
and,
like,
and Invincible also.
No, they're both and Astounding Wolfman. Like, they're just, his work is suffused with that stuff.
Worst, but it's not. I don't know if it's a father stuff in the way that he seems to want.
Yeah. No. I know.
I wouldn't.
I just, that was being. I'm right. Fascinated by that. And it also is predicated on the worst interview question I ever asked of him. He just looked at me like, what's wrong with you? I mean, like, Thor? I don't think that's what you're looking for. Although, you know, old man Thor lately, old King Thor, he's been, no, it's not, it's still not what you're looking for.
It is tough because it's sort of the end of the superhero story, you know, if you become a dad. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, Animal Man would be a good one,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, but even that, like, you know, the kid dies. So,
I'm looking around. I can think of a lot of, like, gut punch ones, like Three Shadows by Cyril Pedrosa. It's another first, second book. And we're talking to Scotty Young about that. It's a book that he really appreciated before he became a father. Then he read it again after he'd had his son. And wow, it's really, and I can imagine it's
usually
really tough.
Usually the death of a father or something is, you know, the catalyst of the story or something.
I mean,
the parents die, you know, get shot in the alley, get blown up on Krypton.
I think, I mean, this is a broken record for me, but for me, some of the best father moments is like in Preacher.
Yes.
When you sort of have the flashbacks to Jesse Custer and John Custer.
Did you finish that already?
Yeah, I've read that. And then you flash forward to the issues where he meets, is it Space? Like, they talk about his dad in Vietnam.
Right.
And the way that character regards his father, I think, is for me some of the best done stuff out there. I'm thinking hard about what else it could be, and I can't think
of those are some good examples. And if there are other examples out there we haven't thought of, that's a good place for the comment section, people to go in there and suggest some books about father. What does he exactly want here? He wants that comics for a new dad.
The main character becomes a father. I can think of a ton that are the other direction, like thinking about dads. It's like Fun Home or something, but...
I would say Batman's Son. Get that trade for him. That might work. So email us to contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS. 3262697. If you have a comment or a question you want to get on the show, keep it around 30 seconds. If it's a voicemail, tell us where you are and who you're from. Who you from? Where you are and who you're from.
From. There's a father question.
Who are you and where are you and who did you come from?
His name's Bill. It isn't, by the way.
So we have a couple of shows coming up. It's going to be a busy month for special edition podcasts. We're going to have the, speaking of, Son of Batman podcast coming out soon, the Animated Brain Trust. We're going to have the Amazing Spider-Man 2 podcast coming out. I guess Paul starts to wrap up his Akira. Scotty Young podcast series. Yep. And so those are all coming out within the next 4 weeks or so. So keep your eye out for those. In the meantime, Paul's still chugging along with Fuzzy Typewriter and Mad Men.
You're having a lot of fun with this season of Mad Men, doing Mad Men every Monday. You can check those out.
So many people.
So many people.
Wow. I'm so many people.
What is wrong with you?
That's what Sally said.
Is it?
Okay. I'm not used to like a man saying it. That's
in a deep, creepy voice.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was. He could have said it too. That's what was great
Buffalo
about
Bill
it.
Or something.
There's so many people. people.
Do it in a Bane voice.
Oh, I'm so.
And now have Eddie Vedder say it.
This next one is dedicated to the fact that I'm so many people.
See, Eddie Vedder would have said something like that on stage.
Yeah, I'm rubbing my eye when I do it. I get all method when I do Eddie Vedder, apparently.
So check that out. Paul, where can they get the Fuzzy Typewriter show?
FuzzyTypewriter.com or head over to iTunes, search Fuzzy Typewriter.
All right. In the meantime, you can head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. Tell us what you thought of the books this week. Tell us some more daddy comics or dad comics, however you want to say that. Make you feel less uncomfortable.
Paternity comics.
Paternity books.
I'm so many daddies.
Find all of our other podcasts, including all the many special listening shows coming out soon. You'll find them all at ifanboy.com.
And you can follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And you can follow us individually on Twitter, J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and Fuzzy Typewriter.
Now, this is going to be normally the part where I tell you to go review the show or tell people about it. You know what I'm talking about. Tell people about it. Get it out there. All right. Last time we talked about, we were at 947.
Yes.
A whopping 8 of you came out there.
Yeah.
So we're at 955.
Slow clap.
Is it ratings or reviews?
It's reviews.
Okay.
We're still at this point, like I don't know how you get us down from 5 stars. That's not a challenge. Let's just take that sentence back. No. We need 45 more. And then I think we can pretty much stop asking for reviews.
Yeah, if you're sick of us talking about it.
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
we really
Once we get 1,000, I think we'd be like, no, that's cool. That's all right. That's fine.
In fact, we may start talking about it more. Until
might have to.
We get those 55.
Top of the show, middle of the show, third act.
Maybe we will read the 1,000th review on the show.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll happen. So get that on there.
I wish they talked more about Guy Gardner, but I think it's okay.
I like Guy Gardner.
You would.
That's it for this week's show.
He's awesome. We need more Yelp reviews.
We have Yelp reviews?
I want somebody to write a review on iTunes as if it were a Yelp review.
I don't even know what that means.
Exactly. Exactly. You're crazy.
I'm Connor.
You're crazy.
I'm Connor.
Dude,
you are so many people.
Still, I just can't help but wonder why.